I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Tuesday, the 12th of November. I'm Jules Breach. He's Andy Brassel. And this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
With Mason Greenwood coming in and having Martial and having Rashford and having Daniel James, he's got a lot of pace in his forward line. I think it's paramount that he goes and buys a proper centre forward.
Coming up, we'll discuss the Lionesses and their development under Phil Neville, the mini resurgence at Manchester United, and we'll talk all about diving in the Premier League and a little bit on Richarlison as well. Andy, we've got to start with the breaking news that has just come out that Neil Warnock has parted company with Cardiff City. We just walked into the studio ready to record. And then we've seen this news, so we've got to have a quick chat about this. Are you surprised?
Yes. A little bit. I can't say I've followed the Championship enormously closely this season, but you know, he is a coach who has really marked the recent history of Cardiff City. Maybe expectations overextended a bit by his almost miraculous getting them into the Premier League, and he wasn't far off keeping them there as well, without an absolutely humongous budget, of course. He, and this is no comment on how the directors of the club have necessarily dealt with it, but he had to deal with the Emiliano Sala thing as well, which was awful for him. And I think you could tell that that really affected him. I mean, he's someone who's very open, sometimes too open about the way he feels. But with that, I think he came out of what was an incredibly difficult situation with a lot of personal credit from that. And you just wonder what next for him. I mean, it's easy to think at 70 years old that maybe that will be it for him. But there's always some sort of promotion push around the corner for Neil Warnock, isn't there?
It's incredible that he's 70 years old, still managing in, you know, the highest end of the football pyramid, yeah. Really. And like you say, I think he did a brilliant job getting Cardiff to the Premier League. He was so entertaining last year in the Premier League, both in terms of his management style and the way he was with the media as well. I can just remember quite a few moments that were laugh out loud. And it's a shame to see him go, especially because I'm assuming it's down to Cardiff's recent run of form and their results. They're 14th in the Championship. But there is this expectation that when clubs get relegated from the Premier League, that it's simple to bounce back and get promoted again the next season. And that is not easy. You look at the three clubs that came down last season. Fulham are just outside the playoffs as it stands. And Huddersfield are only just above the relegation zone on 3 points. And they had an awful start to this season. Yeah. So Cardiff in 14th, you know, obviously that's not where Cardiff fans want to see their club, but they're not that far off the playoff places. It's so competitive in the Championship. They're only 7 points off sixth place.
You're right. And you made such a good point there about Huddersfield, actually. They've had a great mini run under the Cowleys. Mm. Otherwise, they'd be, well, probably below Barnsley, wouldn't they, at the moment? And you do look at the teams between Cardiff and the playoffs. There's some quality in there. I mean, I think you have to look at Fulham, Brentford, certainly. It's tough. There are loads of teams in there and not everyone can make it. I mean, that is the thing we've seen. And again, it's something that you pointed out earlier when we were talking about it off mic. The fact that there's been quite a turnover of coaches in the Championship already this season.
It's because the league is so tough. It's so hard to get out of the Championship. And when you look at the table and how close it is at the top, the lead is changing constantly. West Brom managed to keep their place at the top this weekend. But you look at Preston, Leeds and Swansea and Forest, they've all been top of the table already this season. And it's constantly changing. I think last weekend, so not the one just gone, but the one before, the lead at the top changed four times over the course of the weekend because of when the teams were playing. And that's what the Championship is like. It is relentless. There are so many matches. They've already played 16 games. But when you look at Cardiff and trying to understand exactly why Neil Warnock has left and why they decided to part, why he decided to part company with the club, or whether it was their decision or his, we're not really sure at this stage because it's such new news.
Well, they've said mutual, haven't they?
Mutual.
But mutual
consent.
Never means mutual.
You know, what does that even mean?
In breakups, mutual never means mutual.
It doesn't.
But I think if you look at the teams below Cardiff as well, it's indicative of something. Okay, Derby are quite struggling under Philip Cocu. Then you look at clubs like Stoke, Middlesbrough, Huddersfield that you were talking about before, Blackburn, who obviously have relatively recently come back up to the Championship. These are all big clubs.
A manager who I think is worth us discussing as well off the back of a record-breaking attendance this weekend at Wembley for the women's game, England against Germany, and Phil Neville. Because it's been an interesting development over the last couple of years since Phil Neville took over as the manager of the Lionesses. And I have to say, first of all, just amazing attendance to see that. It's the biggest crowd that the Lionesses have had on home soil. So to get such a huge crowd out, particularly on a weekend, you know, where there was lots of other football, because that tends to be what stops fans going to women's football if there's other football on that weekend. And yet we got such a huge crowd at Wembley, despite the fact it was a Premier League weekend. Mm. Such a huge turnout. And the weather was atrocious as well.
It was.
To have what? It was nearly 80,000 fans at Wembley. It was amazing to see. But there's been a bit of criticism for Phil Neville in the work he's done, particularly since the World Cup. Do you think it's fair?
I think it's a sign of progression in the conversation around women's football in England, because I think there's still a little bit of, and of course it is a developing sport, there's no getting away from that, but I think, you know, there is something slightly patronising to talking about the occasion all the time and talking about the development all the time, and, you know, just almost taking the actual sport itself as, you know, just a sideline. I think the fact that we're getting to a point where we're discussing Phil Neville, where people, not just us, not just people who cover women's football all the time, but people who've begun to take more of an interest in women's football, in the wider football watching public, are starting to discuss whether Phil Neville's doing a decent job or not. That shows that we're moving on, that we're not just talking about the broad themes. Of course, there are strides to be made. You know, there could be more sponsorship, more backing from big business. And I think that's pretty clear. But I feel quite good about the fact that we've got to the point where there are enough people interested that they can look at it quite critically and say, rather than just dwelling on the World Cup, say, is he actually doing the right thing? Now, on the other hand, I think that's kind of encouraged by Phil Neville himself. He's talked quite openly about the fact that they've struggled to find their way since the semi-final of the World Cup. There's a real test of him as a coach. Of course, we know he has that background and that connection with elite women's sport through his sister, Tracy. We know that, of course. But in terms of a manager in women's football, he is still pretty new. And this is something we see in management in men's and women's football. If you get someone who's new to the table, they do really well at first. When they hit their first wall, that is the real test. And that's exactly what this is of Phil Neville at the moment. I think you look at the fact that he's trying to evolve their style. He's trying to make them a little bit more direct at times. And it's interesting because, you know, he said, well, you know, it's all very well to talk about your principles. It's something he talked about after the Germany game. But the fact is, there is an issue with the fact that we're losing 5 out of the last 7. And that is something that I have to address in the here and now. It's very honest of him.
It was very honest of him. And Kieran Tavam, who does all the women's football pieces for The Athletic, who I follow religiously. He's absolutely brilliant and lovely guy as well. He wrote a piece off the back of the match on Saturday that lost to Germany at Wembley. And he was kind of talking a bit more about the tactical sort of decisions that have been made by Phil Neville in the kind of last few games, and that's actually what's being criticised. And like you say, I think it's a good thing that we're focusing on women's football from a tactical perspective, and that there is criticism. That's a step in the right direction, in my opinion, as well.
But don't you think part of it, Jules, is the fact that there's something that people really noticed during the Women's World Cup, and we've carried on to notice, I think, in football punditry elsewhere, that the fact that the quality of the female pundits we have is generally so high that encourages that sort of discussion. I'm thinking Karen Carney, for one. She's excellent. She's excellent on men's football as well. And that's something that has brought the discussion along as well.
Yeah, and Karen's a good mate of mine, and we were talking about the match, and she said to me that she feels like there is a little bit of a hangover from the Women's World Cup from the girls at the moment, and that needs to be addressed.
It's kind of the opposite of what happened with the men's team under Gareth Southgate. I mean, do you think part of that is the fact that I think what worked really well for Southgate and England after the 2018 World Cup in Russia is that they had the Nations League to go into straight away. So they had meaningful matches straight away. And that's not been the same for Phil Neville and the Lionesses. I mean, I know in life you have to attach meaning to whatever you want to attach meaning to. And for example, this game against Germany is a case in point. The fact that people are there, the fact that it is a record crowd, the fact that it's Germany who are a real leader in European or women's European football, I think is a big deal. But I think it's natural, like Karen says, that there is that kind of lag as well.
She actually talked about that when we were discussing it. It's like you were in our conversation, because she said that in the times that she played, and obviously Karen retired this summer, in the previous tournaments that she's played in, she said what tends to happen is that after the tournament, you would have qualifiers. So you tend to play what she called, you know, naff opposition. Yeah. And therefore you'd be able to get over that World Cup hangover. So because you're likely to beat that opposition because they're not quite as good as you in those qualifiers. And because England for so long have been one of the more elite women's football teams internationally, they got quite a lot of victories in those qualifiers and would perform quite well off the back of coming out of a tournament. Whereas what's happened this time is they've played really good opposition in friendlies like Brazil and then like Germany at the weekend. And therefore they've not really been able to get over that hangover.
Well, you mean you need to hammer some chumps to make yourself feel better?
That pretty much is what she's saying. And that's what's happened in the past, is that they weren't able to regain their confidence off the back of an exit from a tournament because they played opposition that were easy to beat. Whereas that's not really happened this time. They've played better opposition. And therefore, this kind of little run that's not been too great for the Lionesses has continued. And it's a real shame to see England lose on Saturday, especially so late on.
Yeah.
Because a draw wouldn't have been the end of the world, even though it wasn't England's best performance. You don't want to lose on home soil, and you don't want to lose on an occasion like that when you've got a record crowd at Wembley watching the Lionesses. It was just a shame that it happened like that. And particularly because there was the missed penalty again from Nikita Paris. And that's something that I think I'm intrigued to know everyone else's thoughts on, that because she's a young player. She doesn't have a great deal of experience in these big games. And she's now missed, I think, 3 of her last 4 penalties. And Phil Neville is continuing to, you know, choose her to take the spot kicks for the Lionesses. I don't know whether that's the right decision, because I feel like I'm a bit split on it, because part of me thinks I quite like the fact that he's still kept the faith in her so that she doesn't lose her confidence, and he gives her another go to try and score a penalty. But then at the same time, why stick with something if it's clearly not working?
Yeah, I suppose that's a big question. I think especially with penalties, where psychology is such a huge part of it. I mean, I do remember Teddy Sheringham, maybe Tottenham fans can set me exactly straight, at Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble. But there was definitely a Spurs season where Teddy Sheringham missed a good 6. And that amazed me that he was allowed to carry on. I always thought of him as a good penalty taker. You know, I mean, you can look at the best of the best. Look at Leo Messi. I mean, he has a below average success rate for penalty takers. I think he's successful with something like 72% of his penalties, something like that, which is below the average of scored penalties generally, if we factor in not just world-class players.
Milivojevic.
All penalties. Yeah, he's different.
God.
Now he's the GOAT if we're talking about penalties. I think Nikita Paris is an interesting discussion, though, Jules. And I think she's really where England are at to an extent in microcosm. Because to me, they did fantastically in the World Cup. Maybe ever so slightly better than I expected, given that it was a World Cup rather than a Euro, certainly in terms of final result. I think it's difficult to get over simply because, you know, on another day they could have beaten the US. Having said that, I think you could say the same about the French in the previous round. You could say the same even about the Spanish in the round of 16. Like, all three of them inconvenienced the States to a greater or lesser extent and had a few things go against them. But now to follow that up, that is the next stage in development. Let's not talk about the development off the pitch for a moment, because that's going great guns. But we'll talk about the development on the pitch. Now, for me, the one player in that team who I think she's truly elite, she's absolutely one of the best players in the world, is Lucy Bronze. That to me is beyond discussion. But I think part of that, she's been at Lyon for a couple of years. They're the best team in the world. She knows her role in the team. She knows the standards. She knows the expectations. She knows what it takes to be one of the very best players in the world. Now, it's a compliment to England and English women's football that Lyon want to get other English players over there. But you don't walk in there and just get in the 11. Mm. And we've seen Nikita Paris contribute for them this season. We've seen Alex Greenwood contribute for them this season. Izzy Christensen has obviously had her injury difficulties. I'm sure she'll get over those. But it's almost like you're having to start all over again. And that is the bit where you go from being a very good player to being an elite player. And it's hard. It's really hard. And so for a player, like you say, like Nikita Paris, who's really away from England for the first time, to do all that adaptation on a personal level that Lucy Bronze had to do and by her own admission quite struggled with at the start, and absorb everything and meet the standards that were expected of you, and to go from being a main player in your team to fighting with, you know, you could look at the Germany team that they were playing on Saturday night. And, you know, you look at Jennifer Marijan there. That is the sort of player that you're playing alongside when you're playing for Lyon. So on one hand, it's a compliment that they've been asked to go. But on the other hand, it's a huge climb to establish yourself in that environment. It's the same with Alex Greenwood. She's, you know, got Batcher to fight for a place with, be it a left back or left wing back. It's all going to take time. And I think those efforts that you have to make on a personal level to improve yourself kind of makes it a state of flux for the team as well, to a certain extent.
It's a lot of pressure for the likes of Nikita Paris to be playing for the best women's club in the world. You know, Lyon are the best club, and that's a well-known fact. And that move for her over there was such a big deal. And obviously being able to go along and have other English teammates there with her to help her settle in, I'm sure has done her the world of good. But when we were at the start of the season and I worked with Phil Neville on the Manchester Derby for BT Sport, I asked him about, you know, the girls going abroad to play for other clubs, because obviously here in the UK, we want to see the best English players playing in the WSL, because we want our game to grow and we want the WSL to continue to produce the best players, and we want to see the best players on show here week in, week out.
Yes.
However, I asked Phil what his opinion was as the England manager, you know, like, is this a positive thing for you? And he said, for me, it's nothing but positive. He said, Nikita going over there and teaming up with Lucy Bronze and Alex is the best thing for her development, because of course we would love to see our homegrown players playing in England in the WSL every weekend, but you can't turn down an offer to go and play for the best women's club in the world. And so he said that for her development, that's something that as England boss, he loves to see. And, you know, it's fair play to him that he's still, you know, getting her to take these spot kicks. We don't see the girls training every single day or each week or whenever they're with the England camp. We don't know what she's been like in training with those penalties. So, you know, who are we to judge for Phil Neville, you know, continuing to pick her to take the penalties? But she's clearly a quality player and one of England's best and England's future as well. So it is an interesting discussion, though, because I know that a lot of fans have been debating whether or not that's the right decision, and they've been questioning Phil Neville on that. But yeah, who are we to judge, really?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jules and Andy on footballrambledaily.com. I'm Andy Brassel. She's Jules Breach.
You got it the right way around this time.
I thought I just kept getting it wrong in rehearsal. I don't know. Right. Have I been getting it wrong, listeners? You can mail and tell me, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble is the mothership. You know what? Let's talk about your team, but not talk about your team. I mean, you may think your team had a bad weekend, Jules, because you lost. I would take that, see you, and raise you drawing with Doncaster in the FA Cup so you get an extra game that you don't really want when you're trying to get away from relegation at the bottom of League One. There you go. I've got it off my chest. We're not going to talk about the Brighton end of losing at Old Trafford. I know you were disappointed with the performance. However, Manchester United were very good.
They were really good. And I had tickets to the game, but I didn't end up going. And I'm quite glad I didn't go now, because that would have been a long journey home. I had tickets, but I ended up working on Sunday. So I didn't go to the match. And I only obviously managed to watch the highlights on Match of the Day, because the game wasn't televised. We weren't great, but I think it was purely down to Manchester United being really good on the day. And that's not something we've said often this season. But the return of Anthony Martial and possibly the confidence that the team got after qualifying for the Europa League knockout stages in the week with a very comfortable victory over Partizan Belgrade, I think that the team are just playing with a lot more freedom and a lot more confidence, and they looked a lot better than what I was expecting them to look against us on Sunday.
Now, there's an interesting tweet we've got here. Pierre Idelecto at Yashot has written in, thanks Pierre, and says, is the United team performing better without Pogba now, free from the shackles of his 10 or 8 quandary, all well set for him to return as a deep-lying number 10 in the mould of Frankie Lampard? We can't get through anything without talking about Frank Lampard at the moment. Personally, I think Pogba will still be a great addition when they come back. You can fit him anywhere. Ideally, they would have built the team around him in the first place. But it does feel a little bit more like it's not just going to be him and a skeleton crew, that there is actually something for him to work with, which maybe didn't seem like the case before. I mean, is it as simple as the return of Martial? Because not only does he add something to the forward line, not only do you have that movement and the finishing, but he brings more out of Rashford.
He does. I think Rashford's looked quite isolated the last few weeks without Martial there, and just having them being able to link up, Rashford just looks happier. He looks more confident. He's making runs that we haven't seen him make in the last few weeks when Martial was out injured. And I just think as a pairing, they offer something dangerous going forward, and that's difficult. And then when you've got Dan James in the mix as well, and it was his birthday on Sunday as well, so he got his little birthday wish with that win.
I thought you were going to say he got his birthday bumps from Brighton's defenders.
Oh, he did a bit.
Clobbering him left, right
he
and centre.
Go on, donkey. but yeah, no, Dan James, we've talked about him a lot this season, haven't we, Andy?
And we have.
You know, he's been one of Manchester United's standout players so far, which we talked about before, says a lot about United this season, because a new young signing like him shouldn't really be Manchester United's standout player when they've got the rest of the quality in their team. But yeah, I just think going forward against us on Sunday, they just looked a lot better, a lot more assured, confident on the ball. And, you know, every time they attacked, I thought, oh, God, they're going to score again here. And Rashford could have had a hat-trick. He could have done. And so the scoreline really probably doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, they got off a little lightly. But I suppose the real thing as well is the improvement of those young players that the, I guess, less angry United fans have been getting in touch with us, have been talking about for a while. Andres Pereira had a good game, I thought, which was a step forward for them. But it's just the energy, the dynamism. It's about the mood, isn't it? Because, you know, United are developing some young players. Chelsea, as we've been talking about left, right and centre, have been developing young players. But I think we said a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, Jules? It just looks so much more fun for Chelsea. It's not just been about the results, which, of course, recently for Chelsea have taken a sharp upturn. There's very few points at this season where what United have are doing looks fun. I think that's underrated. It's always an underrated thing, isn't it, in the football experience, that the fact that we can be looking at the medium term and the long term so intently that you can overlook the beauty in those Manchester United fans just turning up, watching the game and being entertained after a lot of bloody miserable football in the last couple of years. So we could sit here and we could talk about, well, they still need to sort out the football management structure. They do. Does this mean anything solved in terms of, does it mean they're qualifying for the Champions League? Well, no, it doesn't. But what it does mean is that those United fans, who I think have been pretty patient since Sir Alex Ferguson went, have actually had an afternoon where they've thought, oh yeah, we've been entertained there.
Yeah, and that's what you want to see as a football fan, isn't it? You pay your money to go to these matches, or, you know, if you're not there, you're watching it on telly and you're a fan of that club. You want to see entertaining football. And sometimes, even if that means you don't get the result you want, if the team are playing well and they're putting in the effort and you feel like they've tried hard to play good attacking football, you almost don't mind the results so much as long as the team are playing well. And in terms of result, now Manchester United, with that win over Brighton, puts them seventh in the table. They're only a point behind Arsenal, in which, you know, it doesn't say a lot because Arsenal
haven't been
great. It's not an endorsement. No. But that top six now doesn't look unachievable for Manchester United. Whereas we'd be talking about United in a very different way had they not beaten Brighton, because they would have been sort of, you know, 13th or 14th in the table, I think, which would have been not what you'd expect from United at this stage. And I'm not saying that we're seeing, you know, the United that we're expecting yet, because I don't think they're there yet, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. The type of football they played on Sunday is more what United fans want to see. And, you know, scoring three goals at home, giving the fans something to celebrate. I say it through gritted teeth, but it was a good performance from Manchester United.
Yeah, and it was, if we go back to the beginning, where they beat Chelsea 4-0 on the first day of the season, obviously that looks terrific on paper. This is a much better performance.
Yeah.
This feels more controlled, more like they know what they're doing, more like there's a plan for the first time in a very long time. I mean, do you think they've got a bit of confidence from what's happened for them in terms of the Europa League? I mean, all right, it's not the most difficult group in the world, but you look at the way they dealt with Partizan through the week, and, you know, there was that sense of control. There was also that sense that, say, someone like Rashford, who's one of their premier players, is enjoying himself, and also the sense that the younger players like Mason Greenwood are getting very, very useful miles on the clock.
They'll have taken so much confidence from qualifying at this stage of the competition, because they could have pushed it right to the end and then we'd be talking about their European qualification as something completely different, leaving it that late. So, you know, any club to qualify at this stage of, you know, of the Europa League is a really good thing, because it's not easy, especially when you clock up all those miles. They've had to do a lot of travelling in their games so far in the Europa League, and then you add in their Premier League
more to come.
You add in, you know, the Premier League fixtures as well. It's, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot of games, and I think that win and how comfortable it was in the week will have given them a lot of confidence coming into the weekend, and United will probably now push on from that and go on a bit of a run.
You know what the thing is, though, with the likes of Martial and Rashford? They prove that you can be fast and stay on your feet. Now, of course, there's been this discussion about Richarlison, which is particularly intensified since the Tottenham game, in which he wanted a penalty seemingly every 45 seconds. He was excellent at the weekend, and he scored the winner for Everton at Southampton.
Great finish as well.
Yeah, really terrific. And they seem to be turning things around. He is a kind of purple, patchy sort of player, really, isn't he? But interesting, I thought, Marco Silva's defence of him, I would say vehement defence of him, especially on his interview and Match of the Day with Gary Lineker, where he talked about Richarlison not receiving a single yellow card for diving in the time he'd been at Everton. Now, I would go back to that game, and I'm not saying it's necessarily something that should define Richarlison's game. There's a lot more to like about him. I'd be interested to see him get a run at centre forward. What happens to Cenk Tosun long term, who knows? But I would like to see him play there for Everton, given that he plays there for Brazil as well. I think it makes sense if he can do the same for club and country. But if we go back to that Tottenham game, not only did he get away with a dive or two, Son Heung-min got away with one particular notable dive, didn't he? Something we've talked about VAR a lot, well, not as much as some people, but we've had to talk about it on a few occasions, haven't we?
Yeah.
I wonder if a side effect of VAR, and it's something that Luke talked about very eloquently on the Ramble yesterday, the idea that the problem is at the moment, because you have referees sort of stepping back from making a decision because they think that VAR will come in to help them, and then VAR not doing anything because they don't want to encroach on the referee's absolute authority on the pitch, so essentially nothing happens. Is that what's happening with diving at the moment?
It's such a weird one, because I thought the introduction of VAR would guarantee more penalties, because...
Did you think it would guarantee less diving?
I did, yeah. I thought it would guarantee less diving, more penalties, and it's kind of had the opposite effect.
Yeah.
There's for me, been more exaggerated... I don't like to call them dives, because I don't think they always are necessarily dives, but there's been more exaggerated going down than there.
More not trying to stand up?
Yeah, it's just been a bit weird, hasn't it? Because especially with players that you don't really associate diving with, like Son, for example.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the ways that the players are going down to exaggerate that they've been clipped in the box, it's just been quite interesting to see, because these are decisions as well that they're not being dealt with consistently by VAR. So in one game, I remember back to the Brighton one when Aaron Connolly was fouled.
Mm.
That was a penalty, and I say fouled very lightly, because he was clipped by Keane, but it's not a penalty for me.
Yeah.
And that was given as a penalty. And then you then look at last week and those incidents that you talk about, and Son wasn't a penalty, and then Mane's wasn't a penalty, which was very similar. So it just doesn't make any sense to me, because I was expecting that players would be fearful that with VAR there watching their every move, that they would be less likely to dive, but yet what we're seeing is almost the reverse effect of that, where they're actually exaggerating moves in order to get penalties because they know there's a threshold that they have to reach in order for something to be overturned.
Yeah, I think that's probably it, isn't it? I mean, I guess what you've got to be more concerned about, rather than being punished for diving, the only thing really you've got to be concerned about is the wrath of Sean Dyche, because that's something that he gets really, really upset about more than any other coach that I can think of in the top flight.
I just love
just
it.
Like
just
that.
Like that. I was about to do a Sean Dyche impression. I need to have a few more nights out and 20 cigarettes before I come on air. But yeah, no, he has been going in on it, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And I don't blame him, because it's one of the things that we don't want to see in football. We don't want to see diving. And
can I tell you, I'm not fussed about it.
Are you not?
I don't really think it's a massive big deal. I just think, yeah, if you're going to hang a leg out as a defender, you deserve all you get.
Well, they all do it, so I can understand why you don't really care that much. But
to me, what's far more... diving's a bit irritating. Over the top of the ball tackles, that is a problem.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot more studs up tackles than there used to be. And that is a big deal, because diving is just a bit of a pain, a bit of an irritant. It doesn't really finish anyone's career or anything like that, or put their career in serious trouble or set people back 6 or 12 months, does it?
But it is cheating.
You know what? Holding people at corners is cheating. But everyone does it. Stealing 5 yards at a throw-in is cheating, but everyone does it. But I think the English game particularly has bees in its bonnet about what's acceptable cheating and what's not acceptable cheating.
Very true. There's a threshold on cheating.
There is. I mean, what's cheating and what's a marginal gain? It's just like any kids playing games. You're always testing the boundaries, aren't you, when you're a kid, and when you end up playing that game as an adult, you do exactly the same thing.
You know what
don't
I
you?
Hate more than anything?
Go on.
When people cheat in board games.
Example.
So Articulate, favourite board game ever.
What's Articulate?
Oh my God, Andy. Oh, we need a board game night. Articulate is so good. It's a game where you have to articulate or describe the words that are on the card, and you play in teams and you describe the words to the people in your team, and however many you get right, you move forward through the board and you just have to make it round to the finish line.
Maybe I'm being naive, but how do you cheat at that?
By moving the counterpiece further ahead when the other team aren't looking. And I've played many a time, and because I'd like to say I'm quite good at this game, me and the girls, we often play girls versus boys.
Right.
And the girls are just much better than the lads.
Right.
And the boys just always try and cheat in board games, and I'm sorry, but I'm not having that.
Really?
If you're not playing fair, don't play at all.
You know, the next time you see a throw-in being taken, you'll think of someone cheating at Articulate.
I get very angry.
Not only do they...
Deitch angry.
Not only do they steal ground, but they don't even pull the ball back properly over their head nowadays. We'll have a whole episode on throw-ins at some point, but maybe we won't record it for you to listen to because it would be exceedingly dull. But you have been very nice to us, as you're always very nice to us, and sent us some mails. There's one here from David Spencer. This is a nice one. Hi, guys. As is the case, first-time emailer, but I love the pod. I live in Orlando, Florida, and usually listen while driving or doing chores in my apartment. You two definitely make stressful necessities better. I'm writing to second your newly minted favourite listener from last week. Oh, there's a competition now.
Oh.
They're all trying to get in our good books. I'm a long-suffering, now ecstatic Leicester fan, and the top flight was hard to watch while the Leicester, while the Foxes were struggling to get back in. Picking any Premier League team to follow was hard because the emotional attachment just wasn't there. But now I'm also following Brighton and getting excited every week. What are you doing to these people?
I love it. Brighton have got so many new fans.
And Andy, it's harder to even see Wimbledon highlights over here. But I have informed way too many people over the years that Vinnie Jones used to be a very hard footballer for the Dons. Either way, brilliant show, really fun to listen to, and wish you guys were coming stateside NYC for the NYC Brooklyn show. But I guess I have to settle for the other lot. David, thanks, David.
Cheers, David. Love that new Seagull supporter. I should be on commission.
Yeah, you should be. You certainly should be if those worldwide memberships start selling like hotcakes. We've also got a point of order here from William Carson from California. Hi, Jules and Andy. After hearing about Jules' trip to the NFL match, I started wondering about the different pronunciations of Jaguar. I'm presuming he says Jaguar. It turns out the word entered the English language via Portuguese. So, Andy, that being the case, wouldn't the American pronunciation be more correct than the British pronunciation? Thanks, and I love the show. Well, regardless of whether it's correct or not, I definitely prefer Jaguar
100%
to Jaguar.
The effort that he's gone into there to find out the history of the word, I'm impressed.
The thing is, when you say Jaguar like we do, it makes it sound like it's got an E in it. Which it hasn't.
No, Jaguar.
Jaguar.
Jaguar. So much better, isn't it? Why can't we say everything in an American accent? We'll do the whole pod in an American accent next week.
Let's.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. As always, get in touch with us at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel. Have a good week, and we will see you next week. It's an international break, but don't worry, we're still going to be here.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
and receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.